everybody hither and yon, and perhaps especially to those who are on the yawn side of the equation. This is the latest in the Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World music show, where we've started kind of branching out into interview formats. Now, I'm not going to even start talking about overlap between this initiative and the frigging education one, because although significant, it would be detrimental to the present purpose. But one and all, folks, really I'm grateful to be able to kind of expand in the show and just kind of bring in people from different standpoints, different perspectives. Dan, the seriously legit Dan Hayward, was not able to join in for this conversation, much though he wanted to, scheduled work and things like that. But I mean, man, I could go so many different rabbit holes when I'm talking about David from Rad Owl. And literally, we were talking just about even significant overlap just between kind of his life experience, motorcycle trips, Newfoundland. I mean, Jesus, I almost asked him if he kissed the cod in Newfoundland. He's wearing, that is literally the most legit Newfoundland friggin' stuff right there. So,
Oh man.
Much respect for shouting out the wider region. I know that they don't consider themselves Maritimers and whatnot, but as an Atlantic Canadian thing, man, that is highly legit. So, first of all, man, appreciate you very much. It's late where you are. It's late where I am. I'm unemployed. I don't know what your job situation is now. Time is a relative quantity when I'm just sort of chatting back and forth with this dude from a band, because basically we're both kind of into a lot of the similar punk shit, if I can say that, just based on, you know, like who we seem to be interested in on Instagram. I've been listening to your new release, which did that come out on the 31st of May, bro? Is that what it said on the thing?
It did. Yeah. Yep.
Man, can I just tell you something really that's, I don't know if it's going to fuck up the rest of the conversation or not, but it's just, it's kind of funny shit to me. I turned fucking 36 years old on May 31st, bro.
Wait, what?
You released that shit on my birthday, man. I'm not even fucking joking. I turned 46 years old on 31st May this year.
Well.
So what the fuck, man? I mean, literally, just, I don't know. That's funny shit in my world. I don't know.
You want to hear something even funnier?
Okay.
I turned 46 on May 30th.
Jesus fuck. That's interesting. Yeah.
We're like Gemini twins, you know?
And that's fucked up because we're doing a Twin Cities punk interview. And the first thing that Dave kind of mentioned, it's David. I take it you're preferring here, bro?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Either way is fine. Yeah.
Well, it matters to me because Matt and Matthew, I mean, I don't give a fuck, but I'd rather be called Matt most of the time. So, I mean,
okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So what's you?
Whatever you feel like. I mean, honestly, as long as it's not Davey, I'm fine. David sounds
well. That's
more
fine. I mean, that's what you got in your little thingy here, and that's what it says on some of the internet press, which I am obligated and bound to. And as I was saying, I mean, anybody who knows about this show knows that we can
one day older than you.
That's fucked up. I kind of just did the Bing AI thing, right? Because I'm a fucking learning technology nerd, one and all. And David, when he comes in, he's just like, man, that's fucking garish, or to some extent, you know, it's like, yeah. And that's what AI thinks 80s Twin Cities punk club kind of looked out. And again, I'm going to include in the copious show notes, which we invariably do, again, education, technology, nerd, what the fuck ever. It's like a little zine that kind of goes along with the video and audio content, right? So we just kind of throw in music recommendations and shit. I've been personally, anybody will tell you this, my friends have been like describing me as an obsessive Husker Du and replacements enthusiast since I was 15 years old. First time I heard a fucking Paul Westerberg album, I was just like, man, I didn't even know about the Replacements. I heard about fucking Paul Westerberg first. And I'm determined not to let all of that hijack this conversation, because I'm seriously interested. David, I do these various interviews, and the first thing we want to kind of put out is like who you are, what your band is. But I mean, really, dude, what even are you about? I mean, you live in Minneapolis. Have you lived there your whole life? I mean, what's your story coming into this as a musician, as a fan of music, as somebody who's like in bands and whatnot?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I don't even really know where to be. So, so we're the same age, almost exactly, which is
weird. Yeah, but here we go.
Good reference. So, yeah. So we're, you know, let's see. So I'm from Minnesota. I'm not from Minneapolis, but I grew up in a college town of about 50,000 people. That's about an hour and a half south of Minneapolis, called Mankato. Okay. There's a state college there. You know, my dad worked there my whole life, until he retired. You know, it was a really kind of nice, idyllic place to grow up as a kid. Like, it was, you know, nice. Very like in a river valley, and like,
it's kind of, you had the affordances, you had the, you know, it sounds like kind of educated people kind of in your thing, right? I mean, you went to middle class kind of background. Is that kind of more?
Yeah, it was a nice place to grow up, because it was smaller, but it wasn't like, it wasn't as like close-minded as like, you know, a similarly sized town might be that didn't have like a college, you know. Like, there was always a very strong creative element to the, and there still is. Like, it's, you know, we still go down there and play shows all the time, and it's
awesome.
It's great. So and just like, I grew up in a very magical kind of you know, time in that community, when like there had already been like some pretty significant groundwork laid by punk rock and independent bands, even in my town.
Okay.
Which, you know, was
any home, dude, sorry to horn in, I'm gonna be jumping in, because I'm a Maritimer and that's how I roll, and the uniquely American audience who might be checking this out for the first time after this interview, God help us all, that is a evidence of a loquacious friggin' maritime idiom of horning in on somebody's conversation and then talking about it, you know. So say, college towns in general, man, are fucking tight for punk rock. I don't even know. Like, I mean, especially, you know, literally, since we are apparently fucking weirdly exactly the same age. I mean, I remember when I first started going to shows, when I first became aware, it was sort of like before the internet, but not that much before. You know, for me, it was like age 14 or 15, didn't play any instrument, but I mean, you know, No Means No came and played because of grunge, because of fucking, you know, Nirvana and all that alternative stuff that became, I mean, grade 7 for me. I'm just like, huh, this is bizarre. And from then on out, I'm just, you know, going down rabbit holes where it's just, okay, now this is like, you know, I don't know, fucking, I got tattoos, I got a fucking music podcast. I mean, so it's just started on a very kind of weird kind of just, okay, it's part of the culture now, weirdly, a mainstream part of the culture. And then you just kind of follow up on stuff afterwards. I mean, that's kind of the experience of myself and a lot of my friends, I think, in this region, where a lot of like traditionally big acts don't necessarily show up very often, right? So you kind of show up here randomly, and, you know, Fugazi, for one, was like the fucking most lit experience ever. And just, you know, stuff like that. People make an effort to get here, but it does take an effort. So, you know, for like smaller touring acts, contemporary acts, you know, it's like you can go to Montreal and get paid really well, and you can kind of hit anywhere in Southern Ontario. And then you kind of whatever, maybe go to the prairies, probably not, unless you really like fucking Winnipeg. Then you friggin' end up in BC, and you can make shitloads of money in BC. So why the fuck go to this part of Atlantic, to this Canada? It's just, it's an effort. You don't make that much money. And, you know, demographically, it's not very significant in terms of a number. So that's all the same, man. That's the context of the show.
It's a real bummer that, like, you know, every experience I've ever had playing in Canada over my, you know, whatever, 25 years of doing this, 30 years of doing this, is like you just kind of dip in and you dip right back out, you know, like. You do Toronto, Montreal, maybe Ottawa, maybe you know, Vancouver played recently, but you don't really like hang out there. And like, my dream was always to do like like the Weaker Thans made the movie where they toured like from St. John's, Newfoundland, all the way up to like Yellowknife or you know, somewhere up in the Northwest Territories, and like and all the way over to like Vancouver Island and everything. And I'm like, man, there's so many, you know, like I was telling you before we started the interview, like I've ridden my motorcycle all across Canada.
That is so fucking sick. That is more Canadian than fucking lots of Canadians get to be, man. You get a fucking honorary stamp on your thing for that shit. That's next level, bro.
I mean, I've been from Minneapolis all the way out to St. John's, Newfoundland, so as far east as you can go, and through. We didn't go to Prince Edward Island, but we went to every other, you know, province on the way, and then of course where we live. You know, we live right below on where Ontario and Manitoba kind of meet, and so I've been up to Winnipeg, and I've been you know to northwestern Ontario a bunch, and then I've gone the other way where I've gone across the prairies, and I rode all the way up to Alaska, and then to the top of Alaska.
Fucking insane, man!
And, so I've been all the way through, you know, Alberta, through the Canadian Rockies, through all of British Columbia, and all the way over to like Tofino in the end of the Canadian Trans-Canada Highway on Vancouver Island. And it's such a beautiful, underappreciated, I feel like so many people don't really realize how amazing Canada is, because it's so big, you know, it's so vast, and just like the distances are so vast. It makes it almost like impossible to tour as a single entity, you know? It's like, just because stuff is so kind of spread apart, you know? Like, you know, Winnipeg to Calgary is like such a slog, you know? People don't really do it from here. But like, I don't know, that's always been kind of my dream, is to play more. Like, I have this fascination with like remote places and like end of the line places, you know? And you get out there and you're like, there's people out here. Like, what the hell are you doing out here? You know, like, it's like, growing up in Minnesota as an American, you're kind of like, you're fed this idea of like, oh, you're the coldest, darkest, northernmost, like,
yeah, that's such bullshit. I'm sorry. I mean, this is like, you guys with your, I don't even want to start, man, about the existential joy of living next to the world's weirdest fucking country. But what you're describing, man, first of all, you're fucking in for an honorary fucking Canadian heritage moment, fucking, you know, fungible coin or some shit, just on the basis of what you described, man. That is fucking legit. Can I just ask, though, I mean, so talking about growing up in kind of whatever remote situations, I think what you may have experienced is you spent a lot of time inside, and therefore pursuits like music, where it's like, I'm in the fucking basement anyway, so what the fuck, right? It's kind of, kind of thing for you, or what?
I think it's very much like Minnesota obviously is like you'd probably feel very comfortable here. It is as close to Canada as you can probably get in America. I mean, maybe like Seattle probably too, you know, but like, or like Maine or something, you know, where you're from, obviously it'd be more like Maine, we have to occupy our minds for long periods of time in the winter.
That's right.
With something like rigorous in terms of like mental stimulation or like,
because otherwise you wig out. Otherwise you drink too much. Otherwise you just I guess I'll go fucking trash the car or whatever the fuck.
Yep. Right? So I think, you know, and you see a lot of artists and musicians and writers coming out of places like Minneapolis and Minnesota in general, and same with Canada, where it's just sort of like, man, you got to do something with your time, or you're gonna go nuts, you know. And so, yeah, we certainly, I mean, yeah. So I was very fortunate to grow up. I grew up in a smaller town, but we had this, for whatever reason, we always had this kind of vibrant DIY. music scene there. Like, they always had all ages shows going on, and this is happening.
Any bands besides your own right now? Do you want to shout out like anybody from the scene who kind of landed for you that was local, that maybe, you know, the representative, you know, like maybe they didn't put out something on Victory Records or what the fuck ever, but you know.
No, I mean, the big one. So and just to be clear too, it wasn't like I was aware of this like from when I was like a 5 or 10 year old or something. I became more aware of it when I was like 13. getting into like maybe eighth, ninth grade. You know, up until that point, it was all like MTV and radio, FM radio and all that, you know, getting fed stuff like anyone else. And then, you know, having like the cool, the next door neighbor with the cool older brother who is like in, within the same week, like turn, you know, cause I was starting to play drums at this point and he's right, like, oh, you're a drummer. Like you got to listen to this. And he gave me my first like Rush album, you know, and like, and then, it totally blew my mind. But then within the same week, he gave me a record of a local band from the town I grew up in, called the Libido Boys, who are, kind of like the pride and joy of Mankato, Minnesota. And they were well known in the scene, like in the, you know, in the late '80s, early '90s, like Propagandhi talks about them, like in podcasts and stuff. Like, they toured Europe. They toured with like Descendants and stuff. Like they were legit.
That's legit. Yes. Legit
band. And when this, my neighbor's older brother played me this music, I was like, these guys are from this little town that we're all living in right now. And he's like, yep, you know, you can go see them, you know, next week or whatever. And I was just like, oh my God. So that completely changed. You know, before that, I thought you had to be like, you know, an alien or, you know, or at least like living in LA or New York or something to be in an actual band. And it didn't really compute that you could be in a band where you're from, you know?
So, I'm shoehorning in here now. In terms of your configuration, is it dudes you knew from high school and stuff in your band? Has it been consistent personnel? Because what I've gathered from your band camp, what I've gathered from your website, which believe it or not, I actually did have a look at people, is that like this is sort of people from various bands, not even necessarily associated with Minnesota, right? But like, for instance, Sam I Am. I mean, I don't even know which of you is in Sam I Am or has been or whatnot. And I don't want to talk about all other bands, but it's like, really, it seems like you came through a lot of different sort of vectors to arrive at this place. So are you guys all from the area originally, or did you come like,
It's really crazy. So Rad Owl is actually, so the first Rad Owl album, which came out in like 2018, I want to say, that was four of us who all grew up together at the same time in this little town, going to shows together, seeing all the same bands. And like, so we had good local bands, but then we also had, you know, all of these bands came through our little town, like in the early to mid 90s, like all the bands that you would expect, like everyone on Fat Records, everyone on like Epitaph, Cruise Records, Revelation Records.
That sounds sick. That would have just been sick to be around that, man.
And I
got so much respect for all of those artists, like all those labels and shit. So that would have been awesome.
I remember, I mean, you know, it was before I even had a driver's license. I get dropped off at this all ages venue, you know, $3 to $5 cover, and you go see, you know, like bands that became my favorite bands ever. Like I saw all Jawbreaker, Big Drill Car, Propagandhi, you know, the early version of Propagandhi with John K. Sampson, and like saw them with like 15 other people in the room, like the first time they came.
It completely
changed my whole life, you know, just like having access to that and a broader world and those ideas that bands like the Propagandhi or Bad Religion or whoever were like, you know, talking about, and it was just it was like a conduit to the world at large, you know, and it also was like a playbook for like, oh, you can just be like a regular person and play with your buddies and get in a van and drive around the country and do this. And so, you know, it gave us a lot of motivation to start our own bands and give it a go. So everyone in this band, Rad Owl, everyone else in the band was a little bit like maybe a year or two or three older than me. And they were doing their own bands, opening for a bunch of these bands, you know, they opened for Face to Face or for Lagwagon or for,
that is so fucking sick.
Propagandhi or you know, Sam I Am, or like, it was nonstop. It was like so many good shows every every month, every week. And they were all ages. And so, yeah, that was just a great fertile environment to like, and then of course we're an hour and a half away from Minneapolis. So as soon as we all started getting driver's license, and our parents were letting us kind of leave,
we'd
walk to Minneapolis and see, we'd go to First Avenue and see, even bigger bands and bigger shows. And so I feel very fortunate to have grown up in a place where that was just readily available, you know, as opposed to like, you know, you're talking about being somewhere where bands rarely go to. I mean, I even read, Rush, I hope this doesn't, I hope you don't find this funny, but Rush is
funny. It's part of the show, dude.
I absolutely love, so many of my favorite bands are Canadian, right? Propaganda, Weaker Thans, Doughboys.
Doughboys, fucking A.
Sloan,
Sloan, fucking A.
Yes. No Means No, SNFU, but anyway, Rush, I absolutely love Rush. I read a bunch of...
You're a drummer. You're allowed to like Rush.
Without
being an asshole, okay?
I can't remember where it was. I recently read Geddy Lee's autobiography or something, or maybe it was in this... I have this Rush tour book that has... It literally lists every date they ever played. And they talked about how Rush toured like crazy, you know, and the Maritimes actually had to write... they had to collect a petition to bring the band to Halifax and St. John's and probably is St. John the biggest city in New Brunswick, or is it Monken, or is it
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, if you want me to just to kind of give you a bit of context here, because you are kind of giving some reference point to my region, I'll just say that. So for those who are kind of not necessarily from, you know, the regular local audience of my 9 or 10 punk friends who typically listen to the show, is that the Maritime region is basically 4 provinces, right? Maritime, yeah. Newfoundland, Labrador, which is freaking huge, and were their own separate country for a long time, completely different cultural environment. So kudos to you for going there and doing that, because I've never even been there, even though I've worked with a bunch of them in the Middle East, which is a whole other thing we're not even going to get into. But then, you know, okay, so then you got PEI. It's small. It's cottage country. The birthplace of Confederation, if anybody gives a shit.
I know about this.
So, and that's, you know, and of Green Gables. That's kind of PEI right there. And then we got Nova Scotia. So when you're talking about Rush in Nova Scotia, you are inherently talking about the fucking Trailer Park Boys, wherein Alex Lifeson from Rush guested, and Bubbles was playing guitar. Yep. Because the dude from Bubbles, the character, you know, the guy who plays him, he played in a semi-successful Canadian alternative post-grunge band, Mike Smith. Yeah. It's whatever. So, and so therein, you got fucking the ghetto sort of notion of just trailer park shit, which tends to be urban Nova Scotia in pretty much any capacity, which is in Halifax, my own opinion. And then you got New Brunswick, which is sort of just the place you pass through to get from Quebec to, you know, one of these other spots. And that's fine. Just, you know, pull out and check out friggin', there's 3 cities and they're all kind of within 2 hours of each other down the stretch. So honestly, you know, and we've all kind of had the experience of just not only were we becoming aware of grunge and punk music, you know, the big acts would show up here. I got a Hold Steady tattoo for fuck's sake, talking about Minneapolis. And they showed up here. I was out of the country. I fucking missed it. I fucking loved it. But my best friend went and he's yeah, man, it was fucking rad. And then I met fucking Craig Finn at a VIP when fucking Chuck Reagan's revival tour went through Calgary. I was doing my doctoral work in Calgary. I showed up there. And I asked him about it. I paid, you know, $75 to do the VIP before. And I was yeah, man, that was a good show. He was my best friend was there weren't many people there, but he was nah, man, it was good. So, I mean, the people who come here, there are very many legit people who do come here. But then I'm you're talking to a fucking guy I fucking stood in the mud for 3 hours to watch a U2 concert at Magnetic Hill, right? So, yeah. I fucking saw AC/DC at Magnetic Hill. So you kind of got smaller acts that come here and then like the fucking ginormous ones. Right. Not a lot of like middle ground entertainers. You're not going to see like Alkaline Trio. You're not going to see Hot Water Music show up here. It's like they're putting out albums. They're not on, they're on tour, but you know, as per just trying to make a living at it, they're not going to come here. So I don't mean to wind up the whole fucking thing. I just kind of, it's like remote. It's kind of a, it's kind of a different vibe than what maybe you've experienced. And the connection to Chicago, man, between what I can gather, the proximity relative to the Chicago and friggin', Minneapolis, you know, St. Paul kind of area. Those two cities, right? I mean, there's all the lore. There's all the fucking legends of fucking Husker Du and the Replacements kicking ass around there, right? And then you got kind of what, Wisconsin kind of in between, or what the fuck? What's it like? What's it like playing and touring within that region, if I can ask you that, bro, to turn a rant into a question?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, growing up here, you, again, like, kind of getting back to the whole idea of, like we're kind of, like, seen as, like, a bit of a remote outpost, which is why kind of a lot of weird, unique things came out of here, like something like Prince and something like,
something like,
you know, Replacements and Husker Du. It's because it's kind of like the same reason Winnipeg made, you know, how did Winnipeg produce Propagandi and Weaker Thans and, like, you know, some of the most unique, interesting, awesome music that has really no, there was no sort of fad chasing, or it was just like something that just came out of nowhere, you know, because it was like pure isolation breeds kind of like.
That's right. Isolation and misery in the wintertime conditions, fueling weirdly a fertile breeding ground for angst-filled guitar-heavy music. I mean, fuck, no faking, right? So, I mean, what was it about the drums, man? Are you like a multi-instrumentalist, or did you kind of like? I mean, with the Lawrence Arms, right? You know, fucking the drummer dude with them, he was like part of the scene, and he's like, he played guitar real well, he played bass real well, but they needed a drummer, and apparently he just kind of was like, 20 years later, he's still the drummer in that band. So is it that kind of deal for you, or what?
Yeah, no, I'm just a drummer. I mean, I can hack my way through some, I mean, I took piano lessons, and I can play guitar chords, and I can fake some things, but I'm not proficient on any other instrument. You know, if my contribution to songwriting, I'm like mouthing a guitar riff or a guitar line or a, you know, something like a melody with my, you know, with my mouth. Like I can't really, you know, I don't, my contributions tend to be more like arrangements and you know, let's play this many times, let's make this longer, what, you know, start it like this or whatever, you know. So, but just to your point about though Chicago too, like, so I mean, you know, growing up here, it's sort of like, and I was just, this was just made reinforced recently, because we flew out to play Pootha Fest in Montreal. We went to Boston. We went to Boston first. We played in Boston, and we played in New Hampshire, and then Montreal. And like, the drives are so short when you get out to your neck of the woods. Like, cities are so close, you know. Whereas you get out here, like Minnesota is like one of the last like places that's kind of like, you look at it like a heat map of like, you know, United States or U.S. Canada, like on the internet, like where electricity is or where cities are or whatever. And it starts to get real dark as you head west, right? So like growing up here in bands, like you would have to drive really far to play.
How far is really far? Like how many hours in a car?
I mean, you know, playing Chicago, it's like 6-7 hours away. Winnipeg, 7 hours away. Denver's like 13 hours away. Kansas City's like 6-7 hours away. We would play places like Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you know, Des Moines, Iowa, like even smaller cities in South Dakota and Iowa, and then Wisconsin.
What about Montana? You get much play with them?
What's that?
Montana?
You know what? I've never played a gig in Montana in my life.
Okay.
I've been through there a handful of times, but I've never ever played a show. Some of my friends have. They played in Missoula and Bozeman and stuff like that. But I never have. But I did. So I did. So I grew up in this town, Mankato, and then I went to college. And of course, so we had all this great music and stuff. And then I ended up going to college in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is like kind of like a satellite, almost like a glorified suburb of Chicago. So it's like an hour and a half north of Chicago. So, and I lived there in like the late 90s. And so I was once again, like super, you know, hashtag blessed to be living in a place that was like, so there was amazing shows in Milwaukee. Of course, there was amazing shows in Chicago. I could drive down and see shows at the Fireside Bowl or the Metro and drive back home. And it was totally fine. I mean, first time I ever saw the Weaker Thans was the Fireside Bowl in like 1999 or something like that, maybe. Or I could go to Madison, Wisconsin, or Green Bay, Wisconsin used to have great shows. Like there was that area was a lot more like, there was options that were just like an hour or 2 hours away. You know, Minnesota is a little more kind of an outpost, you know, but, you know, luckily, you know, there's Minneapolis is always been a great music town. And then we have kind of like, you know, we'll go and play like some really small places around here that we've just over the years have made friends in these places and we can go and play and like, 50, 60, 100 people show up and it's a good time. And so
awesome.
You know, we still get our licks in around here, but certainly, you know, all of us in Rad Owl, we grew up playing punk rock stuff that we sound like. And then, you know, I went to college.
So, and I'm sorry, bro. Again, this is just kind of like, so again, I've listened to it, but maybe a bunch of people haven't. And we were just kind of like, even in the chat, even before meeting before this, I was like, yeah, you guys like propaganda too. You know, I was kind of being a bit of an asshole. Sure. Oh. But I mean, that's a good thing in my world, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And if I can just say, you know, some of the things that I, you know, heard where I'm like, okay, maybe this will be, you know, maybe a slightly longer than the 40 minutes or whatnot. It's just some we clearly, I mean, you've got, you know, first of all, it's clear that you all have been playing at your instruments respectively for a while because technical proficiency isn't it's like you've recorded before, you've toured before. I mean, it's just kind of the evidence there of having practiced your craft at your thing for a lot of years, right? So that's just immediate. But then, I mean, you know, you talk about just like what all would you describe what you sound like to somebody who doesn't necessarily know what you sound like, bro?
Well, yeah. So this band was specifically like, so we all kind of grew up together and then we, you know, some of us played in bands together when we were younger and then in different configurations, but then we all kind of went slightly separate ways and we would kind of, a few of us would cross paths from time to time, but we played in very, you know, I played in like a dozen different bands at least in my life. We all probably have, you know, and it's like, sometimes it was more of like a hardcore thing or a post-hardcore thing or, sometimes it was like that.
I've heard a lot of wide range of influences on the new record, though, man. And that's what was cool about it. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, if I'm thinking, I don't know, man, if you've heard the new Hot Water Music.
Of course. Yep.
So
yep.
It sounds to me like that's a more contemporary record for them because, you know, with the addition of Cresswell and with the, you know, various guests appearing on that record, it's like they're sort of, I'm like, okay, there's like something that would fit into an Iron Maiden kind of thing. There's something like groove centered. And I actually kind of noticed that kind of like contemporary, like, let's not quite give as much of a fuck about genre and let's just kind of enjoy fucking, you know, a slightly off, you know, rhythm signature or whatever. I mean, that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting off your stuff. And again, if that's inaccurate, please say.
No.
But if it is, you know, kind of legit, then I'd be interested to hear more.
I actually write, like, I have a writing background, and I used to write magazine articles and interview people, and I kind of have we all have, beyond musical contributions, we all have our own Everyone in the band is kind of good at doing something else that to help the band, right? So I do all the press materials. I write the press release type stuff. You know, our guitar player shot the video that we have. You know, we have like a project manager in our band. We have like, you know, a graphic designer. And so we all kind of contribute. And but anyway, I wrote all the press release stuff. And I specifically said stuff about, you know, Hot Water Music, Iron Maiden. Like, I think those are pretty pretty evident, like, influences. Like, certainly Sam I Am, Descendants all the Cruise record stuff, so like Big Drill Car, Doughboys is a huge one. Propaganda is a massive one, especially on the new album. The new album is a little more shreddy and fast.
That's what I liked about it, man. I'm like, and yeah. I'm even just looking at, you know, the graphic art. I'm like, okay, this is clearly a shout out to metal. And again, like I was being just kind of a wise ass in the, I'm literally listening to your band for the first time before the interview because I'm a fucking professional educator. I'm a professor in education in my life. So that's how I roll. But I'm noticing the metal influences, the unapologetic metal influences. And that to me is like, yeah, man, like, let's fucking stop being like these little kind of existential people. Maybe let's kind of swagger a bit, you know?
Yeah.
Let's actually like Black Sabbath and shit a little bit, you know?
Yeah, we all obviously, so we're all of the age where like we grew up on metal before we discovered punk. So we were all into metal. And that's in our DNA, you know? And you know, so the first Rat Owl record is a little less along those lines. It's a little more scrappy and more in the kind of Cruise records, you know, kind of vibe. But I mean, there's still some cool like guitar harmonies and things like that. But there was a concerted effort the second time around, and we released records at a clip not dissimilar to like what a Propaganda would. It's like every 5 years or something like that. So it took us a while. You know, there was a pandemic involved, and then our original guitar player who was you know, this great guy, Ryan Felgen, who we all grew up with. He ended up leaving the band just because he's got more familial responsibilities and was a little bit more of a I don't know what's a like a homebody. Like he didn't really like doing the touring thing so much, right? So we got a new guy about 2-3 years ago on guitar. Who's extremely like a proper like lead guitar player who can really kind of like wail and shit. And so we kind of like, as soon as we saw what he could do, we were kind of like, okay, let's utilize this asset.
Yeah.
Let's try to like push this a little further. And cause I mean, I do music because I want to keep trying to challenge myself and surprise myself. And like certainly the stuff on the newest Red Owl record, like 5 years ago, I probably couldn't play that. You know, I had to work up my stamina and my chops to be able to like, you know, get through a song like, you know, like Run It Out or Tent City Dream. Like those are kind of like some of the faster ones and they're very intricate parts and stuff.
And bro, can I ask you just like as a drummer kind of question, now that you mentioned All and the Descendants, you know, at least twice on the show, how big an influence is Bill Stevenson on your style as a drummer? Oh, and are there any other drummers of the era who really, you know, contemporary or past, you know, besides Bill Stevenson and others, you know,
he's number one for sure. I mean, like I told you, it's funny. I have my, I love all the punk rock stuff. But I also love, you know, like Neil Peart from.
Oh, yes, of course, But again,
not a lot of what I do really sounds like what he does. But, you know, there's a few things I try to sneak in there unbeknownst to others. But like, I have the Neil Peart's and the John Bonhams and the Stuart Copelands of the world that I love. But then, you know, Bill Stevenson, as far as like a punk rock, like.
That's what I gathered, you know, just thinking to what I was listening to out of the blue. But sort of analogies, right? That was what I was looking for. So
yeah, he's kind of like all. I mean, Descendants in All is kind of like,
and that's
our,
a high compliment, by the way, because a lot of people can't do what he does. They just, you know, he fucking swings. He's a goddamn gorilla on that shit. Yeah. How a man of his size and stature can pull that off, fucking, you know, 90 gigs a year or whatever the fuck they do. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable for that man. You know, the physical, like, pounding of it. And, you know, to make it tuneful, to be, like, in on the songwriting process to the extent that he is, I mean, goddamn. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, no. He's everything, I mean, to be honest, in terms of, like, what we grew up wanting to be and what I wanted to be. I mean, I really did learn how to play drum set by, you know, playing along to Descendants records but, you know, similarly, you know, another guy, who is an idol of mine is, who learned from Bill Stevenson is, Brock Pytel, who's the original drummer of the Doughboys. You know, like that's another guy, like the first show I ever played in my life when I was like 16 years old was a Doughboys. We did a Doughboys tribute set. And I learned how to play a bunch of Doughboy songs. And that's the first time I played in front of people, you know, outside of like a school concert band context.
Man, that's really fucking cool. That's really
You know, so I love that guy. I mean, I have so many people that I hold in high esteem. It's I could go, you know, Jord from Propagandhi, Jason Tate from Weaker Thans. They're all awesome drummers.
Cool.
Alan Kay from Quicksand is one of my favorite. Brendan Canty from Fugazi, of course. You know, Nico McBrain from Iron Maiden. I mean, I have like 10,000 people I could list off, and a bunch of them I've gotten to interview for magazines. I've interviewed Bill Stevenson. You know, I've interviewed Nico McBrain, and you know, one thing I'll say that's like awesome is like they're all like awesome people too. You know, it's like. It's cool and it's cool to like talk to some of your heroes and be like, oh, they're like, you know, they're not that dissimilar from any of us. They're like music dorks who just stuck with it and got, you know, got a break or worked through some stuff and they are where they are now, but they're still like, they just love to talk about music and, yeah, just really cool stuff. But yeah, so Bill is number one probably. And then so related to that, you know, me and Jeremy Burgo, who's the bass player in Rad Owl, who's the guy who introduced me to the Descendants when I was a kid. You know, his idol is Carl Alvarez and Tony Lombardo from Descendants. And we get to play now. We play, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 shows a year with this guy, John Snodgrass.
Who fucking A. Snodgrass is legit, man. That is legit. That is a very cool gig.
And he lives in Fort Collins, where Bill Stevenson, Carl Alvarez, all the Descendants guys were living in the 90s, and some of them still live there. His new record is actually him and Bill Stevenson. Bill Stevenson plays drums and bass on John's new record.
What?
And so we're going out and playing these shows with them now. And I'm actually playing, you know, parts that Bill Stevenson played on, and, you know, and it ain't all easy. It's kind of gnarly, you know? So I have to really, you know,
reprogram a bit, like kind of, you know, from what you normally do, or.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do it exactly. Like, I mean, he's got a way about him that I can't, but I can do, you know, maybe 75% of it, you know, you know, and same with Jeremy, the bass player. It's sort of like, you know, we both joke about how there's times when you have to just sort of like, you know, the part is so gnarly, you just have to kind of like,
just kind of give off any chance of pulling it off. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know that nobody in the audience really knows, but like, you kind of beat yourself up a little bit. You're like, oh man, like I want to like really get this right because
you're, you know, going for such an impossibly high standard. I mean, he's one of these dudes that like Dave Grohl is like, I admire that and have been trying to do that since, you know, whatever. Right. So, yeah. I mean, he's the YouTube clips of shit. So it's kind of, man, everything you're describing sounds really legit. And I really, I want to kind of be sort of true to my word of kind of keeping this to relatively close to an hour. But a couple of things that you've spoken to here, because I now that you've sort of mentioned playing and touring with John, I mean, he's a pretty major songwriting talent. He's pretty awesome at singing. He's a pretty you know, he's making a name for himself sort of at a certain level. And it must be just a real treat getting to play with him, as you kind of described, right? I mean, it's it sounds pretty cool, right?
It's awesome. It's great because all the – so, I mean, this is extremely boring probably for people who don't know anything about who I am or any of my bands. But I'm in, like, a bunch of bands, you know. But at this point in my life, you know, we all have jobs. Some of us have families. It is kind of hard to get out and go on tour like we used to. It's nice to kind of team up with someone like John, who is still like a lifer, and he's out there playing a lot of shows every year. And he'll, you know, we'll go out for a week, we'll go out for 10 days, we'll go out for 3 days, 4 days, we'll fly around and play a bunch of shows and then fly home, you know? And so it really helps me keep my, it satisfies my fix for like wanting to get out and play all over, you know, the country, and hopefully, and we played in Canada a bunch in recent, the last couple of years. And like, you know, it just, music is always like, you know, the big thing, but like, it's always been like kind of hand in hand with traveling and seeing other parts of the world and meeting people.
That's so
cool. Who are in it. Like, that's why I'm talking to you right now. It's like, oh shit.
Exactly. No, man, being open to the opportunity to something, right? By just kind of
yeah.
those channels open. So
it helps make the world like a smaller place, and it helps make like it helps you make sense of the world, I guess. If you're just like sitting around on your couch watching, you know, CNN or whatever the, you know, equivalent in Canada is, like you know, you're just like, oh, everything sucks. Why would I go anywhere? Why would I leave my little corner of the world? Everything's terrible.
That's right.
And it's like, you get out there and you really realize, you're like, man, everywhere is like, people are more or less the same. People more or less want the same things. They're more or less into the same things. People are into punk rock everywhere. And it just makes you like, it's a great way to travel and make meaningful connections. And like, it's like now, you know, similarly, like the motorcycle trips I take, like I meet people that want to come and talk to you just because you're on a motorcycle, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing here? You know? And you're like, you tell them, and then you end up like,
here. What are you doing here? Yeah, man. That's legit. Yeah.
And same with like playing a show in a weird random place, you know, like we, with John last month, or no, it was in April, I want to say, we played up in Ontario. We played in Toronto, but the night before we played in some little tiny town in Ontario, like halfway between Detroit and Toronto. It was like called Tilsonburg or something. Tilsonburg.
And, the kind of outer nowhere part of, southern.
I remember thinking like, John, we did like a week with John, and it was a lot of like Rust Belt. It was like a lot of Midwestern Rust Belt towns, like Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Toronto. And then there's this random small town in Ontario we were playing. I'm like, what is up with this show? You know, why are we doing this? And he's like, oh, I got this hot tip from Cresswell to play here. He said, you're going to love it. And it was a Saturday night. I'm like, why are we playing a Saturday night in this tiny little town in Ontario? It ended up being like one of the funnest
tip from Cresswell. That is some funny ass
stuff. It was an insider. It was like this dude. It was like a punk rock chef from Toronto who bought this like B&B type of a place in this rural town in Ontario. And
that
he's
is
like
the most Ontario shit in the world, bro.
Yeah, he puts on like punk shows and he cooks great food, and like you can play there, you eat great food, and then you stay like in the inn above the bar kind of a thing. And like we had the most fun like you could ever imagine, like playing this like random like middle of nowhere, and we met all these people, and we're like, what are you like, I didn't even know this town existed until like the other day, and like we're meeting all these like like-minded people, and they're so happy that you're there, and everyone's having a great time. And like, you know, it's sort of like with you, like now I'm like messaging with all these people that are in this small town and in this remote place that I would have never gone to if I didn't play music, you know.
No, and, exactly, man. That's awesome.
And so, I mean, I just hope to you know, to keep getting to weird places like that. And, you know, whether on motorcycle or with a band or whatever, like, like I was saying, like I'm not joking. Like I would love to play the Maritimes and get out to you know, more of that area, you know, and just because it's like I haven't done it a bunch, you know, and so it's I feel like you always end up meeting people, you know. It doesn't really matter where you are, you know, and you know, of course, playing the big cities are always amazing too, and there's great energy. I mean, we played Toronto, it was incredible. I got to play the Bovine Sex Club, which is like a legendary.
That is venue. Legendary. Yes, it is. Good call, man.
So that meant a lot to me, you know, and playing Pooza meant a lot to me. Playing Vancouver, we got to play with Brock Pytel from the Doughboys. We got to play with his band out there. We got to play a Doughboys song with him, and that was like a total life-affirming, dream-come-true moment for me.
Freaking A, man. That is tight.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just happy to still be doing anything at 46, you know, as far as like, I've always kind of like been on the periphery of like, there was a brief period in my life in my mid 20s when I was kind of making a bit of a living off of music, where I was in a band that was on a major label and stuff. And I was able to not have a job for a couple of years. But that quickly kind of, you know, evaporated, and I've always kind of had to juggle real life responsibilities with like trying to do, you know, the music thing. And like, that's really like, to bring us all back around to the Rat Owl thing is like, you know, in my later 20s and my 30s, I was in all these bands that were kind of like, I don't want to say they were trying to like make it or whatever, but there was a bit of I was trying to do different things. I didn't want to repeat myself. I wanted to be in bands that were taking it seriously. And like, you know, actually all of us that are in Rat Owl were kind of on these like divergent paths. We were playing in different bands. And we were kind of experiencing like the diminishing returns of being like an aging musician, you know? And here we are. We're like, we finally know how to like play well and stuff. And like, And unfortunately, like, stuff isn't really going so well anymore in terms of like commercial success or whatever. But we decided that all of us in Rat Owl at that point decided, you know, wouldn't it be fun now to get together and make the music that we loved when we were like 16-year-olds, like learning how to play our instruments, like the Descendants and like Doughboys and Sam I Am, well, and Propaganda. And
just,
and like,
as a listener, right? As somebody who's sort of checking out, you know, your new record, I have no experience with your first record yet, but it is on Bandcamp. Both of them are, along with some other, you know, miscellaneous stuff, which is totally awesome. Is that, you know, what I definitely hear, and I guess part of it, which sort of resonates as a fan of this kind of music, is, you know, you can kind of tell when a band is kind of going for it, you know. You can kind of tell when they're kind of jumping for the thing with kind of both hands. It's just the energy is there, the swing is there, and I think, you know, that's why, you know, Cresswell has been such a great addition to Hot Water, because he's kind of injected more of that kind of element to that,
right?
Example, right? So
yeah, I mean, I have found that, not to get all like philosophical and hippy dippy about it, but it's like, you know, because I had a lot of contemporaries, you know, here in Minneapolis who did go on to have more, you know, some actual like success. And I was always kind of like, well, why not me? I mean, I'm good enough. I could have been, you know, like I shared practice space with Motion City Soundtrack for years before they, you know, before they blew up, you know, even. And like, I made a record with Justin Pierre, the singer. I played on his solo record and stuff. And like, you know, I've gotten to do some things that are adjacent to that. But like, you know, I and then touring with bands. Like, I have friends that play in some pretty like massive bands, you know. And I'm like, man, like, why couldn't that have been me? You know, you can't help but be a little bit bitter about it if you really truly.
Of course,
care.
No, of course. I mean, how could you not? Exactly.
But I do find that like, it's a bit of a gift to not be burdened by the fact that you got to make your band like a economically like, you know, profitable enterprise. Like Rat Owl is the best of both worlds, because we take it seriously in terms of like, we want to make really great music and we want to entertain ourselves and we want to hopefully entertain others and we want to present a very professional product. But we're also
like, totally do, by the way, which is what I, again, my opening remarks, as it were, as we're starting the downward slope in the conversation here, is that what you're talking about.
We don't need to make money off of this. Like, we all, you know, we have jobs, and it's like just playing the music together, hanging out together, getting to do the traveling. We played Pooza Fest this year. We're going to play the Fest down in Gainesville in Florida.
The Fest. Okay. You mentioned two major, again, so this show cuts across a pretty, I don't know, diverse audience. And I mean, this is a lot because of, you know, my weird kind of educational background coupled with being an Atlantic Canada kind of regional kind of person and everything else. It's just, it's kind of a unique sort of vector in terms of presenting a format. So for those who are not necessarily hip to contemporary music festivals, Pooza Fest in Montreal is something that's been on my bucket list for years. It's like punk rock bowling in Vegas. I'd fucking give my left nut to go to Paul. Or what's that one that just happened in Fremont, California? No Values. Holy shit. It's that kind of thing. But it's like these shows, I mean, we don't have Riot Fest that's going to come near us, you know. But you mentioned Pooza Fest, a regional kind of, you know, deal, which is legit, right? The dudes who were like in St. Catharines and Leatherface, you know, kind of overlap a bit there in that world. And then down in, again, for people who don't necessarily know, that's not just the stomping grounds of Tom Petty, but also Hot Water Music and just all that really weird kind of gnarly guitar heavy stuff that's grown up around No Idea Records. And, you know, just some of these scenes that are just, it coalesces and you see the lineup like for Fest and I'm like, holy motherfucking shit. Like everybody is swinging into this and they're playing a sandwich spot, even if they're not, you know, on the main stage or whatnot. You know, you might get a glimpse of Chris Wallard if he's fucking out and around, you know, stuff like that. So you're talking about some very legitimate, serious venues, and it must be cool to kind of be in those kind of environments playing and kind of interacting with people, right? I mean, that must be rad.
This is going to be the third time that Rad Owl has played Fest. And so we played it last year, and last year had to be, for me personally, it was probably like the all-time best lineup you could ever. I mean, when I was like, you know, in 10th grade or whatever, 10th, 11th grade, like legitimately, like my three favorite bands were probably Descendants All, Sam I Am, and Quicksand. And all four of those bands, actually, because Descendants and All are kind of a separate band, they all played Fest last year. And it was just like,
awesome. Jesus.
Sam I Am played two sets, you know, Quicksand played their best record front to back. Descendants played two sets, you know, it just like, you know, and then beyond that, there's a bunch of, you know, bands that are further down
which is awesome because it's like a true regional scene. It's not like sort of, you know, again, for people who might not necessarily, you know, have grown up in a certain era, but it was like, you know, you could arguably say like when Vans Warp Tour is going around, it's like they got the ones that everybody's going to want to see. They're throwing them into this one traveling thing. And it's like where that goes is sort of the capitalist venue.
Yeah.
And then all these other scenes are like, well, what the fuck? I mean, we'll have to come up with something else for the other fucking 3 days, you know, besides those 3 days of the summer that those dudes are here. Right. So,
The thing about Fest and then also Pooza Fest too that I really like is they're not festivals in the sense that you're going to like some field in the middle of nowhere or whatever, and then there's like a giant stage and you're like a mile back or whatever. It's like everything is like in smaller venues and you kind of like hop around and they're all in walking distance and you can kind of hop around and like you know, there are some bigger venues, like where Hot Water plays, it's going to be a bigger outdoor venue, but they're not like, you can always get a good view of the band. You can always, like, you know, and it's just like some of my favorite memories of being at these things is like wandering into a smaller venue and just finding something that I wasn't even aware of and, you know, and learning about new bands that are awesome. You know, it's a very like, there's a lot of discovery as well as nostalgia. You know, there's plenty of like nostalgic bands that get booked, and that's kind of where the money is made probably. But then there's all these, you know, a band like us, like Rad Owl, like we're nobody, but you know, I don't think
you're nobody, bro. I think you got like, I totally ditched the notes that I kind of wrote to myself here, but I'll admit it. I did go out for a joint before I wrote those questions, but I was like, you know, it was sort of like, what is it? Post-hardcore supergroup? I was like, you know, quote unquote. It's because it's like, I can tell these dudes like Quicksand. I can tell these dudes love a Veil. I can tell, you know. Yeah. Okay, so there you go. Like, a Veil is an interesting case. A Veil is like, they sort of reform once a year to play what, that their Over the James Fest. Yeah. And it's like, the fucking, you know, Bo lives in like Costa Rica or some shit. Yeah. It's like they perform just like they have their fucking huge ass party, pretty adjacent to Florida, as I understand, as far as it goes. And then they, you know, kind of do some like little regional touring. So I think just to kind of wind the discussion down here, what you're talking about is people who are still like in their prime as musicians, people who have a lot to contribute, people who are like hacking together some kind of living. I mean, you can't just, because a lot of these bands, I mean, they're a fucking, you know, they're like a merch fucking company with musical activities. It's like,
right.
I've been on a couple of Patreon groups for some of these bands. And it's just like, where's the fucking exclusive variant of the vinyl? Where's the, it's just like, holy Christ. I mean, it's a completely different enterprise. It's just like, and I mean, kudos to people who are pulling it out and, you know, figuring out how to make a livelihood at it. But a lot of it is like just completely unmusic related to make it sustainable in today's fucked up, hollowed out economy where anything is just like, I refuse to pay music for art. Well, fuck off then. I mean, maybe you don't deserve art, you woke.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, is that like a pain in the ass for you when you sort of think about it in terms of, I mean, again, not to kind of go out on a tirade here, bro. But I mean, it's like that cocksucker who owns Spotify, you know, it's like he has more fucking wallet than Paul McCartney. And he can't even play a Casio keyboard. Like, that fucking moat.
Yeah.
Anyway, bro, you know what I mean? Like, the post-streaming economy just seems so shitty for, like, people who, like, could have sort of made a bit of a margin at it before a little bit more. It pisses me off in general because I'm late Gen X and I'm getting old and it just pisses me off.
Dude, I'm one day older than you, so I'm even more pissed off.
You're even more happy.
I totally hear what you're saying. And that's why I say like earlier how I'm not even joking about it. Like, of course, like I wish I could not work a job and have music be my life and you know, all that stuff. But like, I've seen what my friends who do this for a living, like have to do to like keep it going these days. And it's like kind of brutal, you know, it's everything dried up, you know, it's just like like as I referenced before, so I played in a major label band in the mid 2000s, and that was kind of
like, say
it was called Gratitude.
Okay.
We were kind of like in the kind of emo. You know, the first tour we ever did was with Jimmy Eat World.
Fucking A, well done, bro.
You know, so the singer of the band was this guy Jonah Matranga, who's in a band called Far. And New End Original, which had people from Texas Is the Reason in the band, and like, so it was like a legit thing, you know, and we made a go at it, and they thought it could be a big thing, because a lot of, you know, we were playing shows with all these bands that got huge. I mean, we played shows like My Chemical Romance and Fall Out Boy and all that stuff, you know. We were not nearly like that marketable and that, you know, whatever that thing was. I really knew we were a little more down the middle, kind of like just a rock group that had some,
which is again something that I personally respect, and that's kind of the thing that's like, well, why weren't the Replacements successful in their day? It's because, you know, they just veered into, well, we're just going to play what our interests are, and maybe that's going to be more AM, FM rock oriented a bit, because that's what the fuck we grew up listening to, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, and you know, the key thing that I would always say is, like, every band I've ever been in, like, I've never really had, like, an image, you know? The bands I admire are, like, Descendants, you know? Even Rush, you know, Rush had a goofy image in the 70s with, like, the kimonos and shit like that. But, like, you know, later on in the 90s, they were just, like, jeans and t-shirt band. Like, you know, like, I could never do whatever all these other bands did to, like, you know, whatever it takes to be, like, a real big successful band. I feel like you got to have some kind of almost, like, you know, I mean, you got the Hot Water Musics of the world and stuff like that, where they're kind of just dudes or whatever, but, like,
but those dudes are on the road all the time. Like, I mean, Chuck Reagan's on all the time, just like me and a fucking fiddle player, you know. I'm gonna take John Gaunt and we're gonna go play, you know, some small, I mean, they got the logistics, but I mean, these dudes, all of them, I mean, Chris Well has a solo record out, I mean, he's got the Flatliners. I mean, all of these dudes. I mean,
all you know,
George is in, like, Bouncing Souls, right?
Yeah. And
so it's just
kind of a hustle now. You got to have multiple irons in the fire, right?
Exactly. Multiple fucking times.
You know? And so, yeah, like I was saying, like, I mean, I would love to be able to, you know, live off of music and stuff like that. But part of me almost feels like this is, I'm kind of happy, and I feel like it's a little more pure for me when I just don't even have to, like, worry about that. Like, we don't even worry. We just worry about, you know, first of all, doing stuff that we think is of a quality that we like, that makes us, that feeds our soul, like, creatively you know, that we're, like, progressing as musicians and songwriters, and we're still hopefully doing this and not doing this, you know.
As soon as it becomes sort of more of an effort than you get from it, then it's time to just kind of maybe, you know, move into other areas of creative endeavor or some shit. And that's a legitimate response. I mean, we wouldn't have a fucking Henry Rollins barking at us from a spoken word stage were he not fed up with being, you know, his punk thing, right? So just as one example. Bro,
I definitely found that, like, you know, to sum it all up, it's sort of like, the work, like, the work is the reward, you know, the work, and then also getting to still spend time with people who are some of my best friends in the world, who, you know, a lot of times at our age, you know, unless you, you know, have a band or you have a project that is, you know, creative or, you know, something that's gives you a reason to get together, some kind of hobby that's not just sitting around drinking and watching TV and, you know, waiting to die. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, as long as, like, five people show up and give a shit, you know, like, that's probably enough, you know, for me to keep doing it, as long as I can physically still do it. But that's the thing, is, like, I thought, you know, at 46, like, there's no way I'm still gonna be playing this music. That's ridiculous. A 46-year-old man. But then it's like, I go and watch, you know, like, Jord from Papa Gandhi, or, like, Bill Stevenson from Descendants, or, you know, No Means No drummer. I just saw some footage of him playing the other day, and I'm like, these guys are 10 years older than me, if not more, and they're still out there wailing. Like, there's no excuse for me to not try to still do it and play at a high level. It's like, all those guys kind of have showed that, you know, punk rock, hardcore, whatever it is, it's not just a young person's game anymore. Like, you can, as long as you can keep kind of remotely keep your shit together, you know, then you can keep doing this.
And even too, this whole, like, you know, acoustic hardcore or post-hardcore, I mean, really, it's like, at the end of the day, it's like folk music. I mean, it's like, what do you call what Frankie Stubbs has been doing on a solo acoustic EP that came out 25 years ago? You compare that to when he's, you know, at a YouTube clip of some, you know, Pooza Fest or whatever 2 years back. I mean, he's just strumming so quietly, but I'm like, that's fucking punk as fuck, right?
Yeah.
And now he's recording again. I think I have heard that. Somebody told me that. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, that guy was born fucking looking old. So who the hell knows? I mean, he's keeping it up. So why the fuck not, right? I mean, in whatever way, why the fuck not is kind of my
opinion. I mean, that's
a dude who's almost 50, right?
Yeah. That's kind of the lesson. It's like the weird thing of like, I mean, this kind of living this kind of life can be like the early death of some people if you have like a proclivity for addiction or whatever, you know. But like if you've kind of made it this long and again if you can kind of just keep your shit together, it can kind of keep you young as well. I think it gives you a reason to stay engaged and have at least some kind of like I was referring to earlier, like if you're just sitting at home watching the news and you don't really venture outside of your city or your state or your region of wherever you live, like maybe you do just get bitter and old and die quicker because you would think that everything is terrible if you just watch the news,
that,
right?
But that's where all these friggin' Trump people come from. Yeah, or some shit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to start jack and ninnying you in the friggin' like, well, geez, it's crazy living. Yeah. Geez, you guys do some crazy shit. But yeah, I will say it's absolutely rad if you will get on a motorcycle and visit this country, bro.
It's ridiculous. You know, when I was on that motorcycle trip to Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, I remember we were staying like, you know, a lot of times we were camping and stuff, but we'd also stay in hotels sometimes and like staying in a motel somewhere watching Canadian TV and the news. It's just, everything is just so much more like less stressful up there and less like,
Every time I go to the States for like work or something, I'm always just like, man, it's like I went to this conference, this academic conference. Dudes, we're like well outside the parameter now. This is the most Canadian shit in the world is the long see you later with an anecdote. So
right.
I did this like high level, you know, thing with the university, and it's like outside of LAX, you know, and it's like, I'm there for 3 days. It's an awesome conference. I'm staying at a hotel. You know, I'm talking to like top e-learning fucking people in the fucking world. And then I'm like, sure can't wait to get back to Qatar where I was living at the time. And then like, yeah, there's a shooting at LAX airport. Some guy walks in and I'm just like, it's on TV. People are sitting at the bar just kind of going, huh. And I'm just like, this is the most American shit in the world. There's a fucking shooting at an airport when I'm trying to just get the fuck out back to the country, right? So, I mean, not to like pejoratively throw down on your country, bro. Well, it's just like, I'm just like, man, it's just like this milieu of like idealism, violence, underfunded public education, underfunded healthcare. I'm like, what could go wrong under such circumstances? But anyway,
it's so ridiculous. But I mean, I do remember on that trip that I was on, it was like right around the time when Donald Trump was just like, there was like this inkling that he might run for president and like they were covering it. The Canadian press was covering it. And I remember just being like, no fucking way, you know, that'll never happen, you know? And like,
how could it possibly happen? When the Simpsons predicted it, right? I mean, and then it's like, it's one of those things like, God damn, it's like dystopian does exist somehow, right?
And I wish I could, it's so funny. I wish I could like transport back to that time when before all the shit that happened after that basically like ruined everything for 4 years or whatever, you know, but I just remember like, you know, just every time I'm in Canada, like, there's less billboards. There's less people shouting at each other. There's less like news that's shouting at you. There's less like,
it's, I know, more you're sedate, man. It's more chill, is what I guess.
Yeah, I feel like whenever I get up there, there's like a sense of calm that kind of comes over me, and I'm just sort of like, oh, fuck, like, you know, and I basically just don't even watch anything anymore. Here, I just can't even deal with it anymore. It's just,
it seems so pitched, right? I mean, it's just people trying to reach their entrenched interests vis-a-vis whatever friggin' residual old fucking school media is available, right? It's just, but anyway, bro, we could talk, you know, regional and countrywide disparities and confluences for the, you know, living end of anybody who's actually trying to listen to the show and learn anything about Rad Owl and or David's significant music career and endeavors. Is there anything else you want to say before I end the conversation here?
Well, you know, two things. So yeah, anyone who does, if anyone is watching and has any interest in what I've been saying. So yeah, the bands would be Rat Owl. We have a couple records out. The new one is out on Sell the Heart Records in the States. We tried to get Thousand Island Records to work with us, and that's still TBD in Canada, but Engineer Records in the UK. And then I have another band called Dead History, which awesome. Is if you are into like Quicksand or like the DC kind of sounding stuff, a little more shoegaze / emo / post-hardcore, maybe even like a little bit like Hum or Shiner, if you like any of those bands.
Very cool. That sounds highly cool, bro.
Yeah. That band is really, really great. We will literally never play outside of Minneapolis, but we made one great record.
People go to your town. People go to your town. They're like, I want to look at First Ave. I mean, you sent me that footage. I mean, I'm getting it's like
I rode my bike downtown. I live like 5 blocks south of downtown, so I ride my bike down there all the time, and it was a beautiful day today. And I sent you that little video I made with the Husker Du video on it, because it was a beautiful summer day. And like, but yeah, so what I was gonna say is like, if you ever do and then myself and Jeremy, the singer from Rat Owl, we have another band called Align, A-L-I-G-N, like tire alignment or whatever. That's also kind of post-hardcore-y, very like Helmet or like Snapcase, if you know of those bands at all. Yeah. But anyway, that's my music spiel. And then I play with Snodgrass and sometimes with Justin Pierre from Motion City Soundtrack and all that. But anyway, what I was going to get to, what tying in with what you just said, though, yeah, you should, being that you are a fan of Minneapolis music lore and all that stuff, if you ever want to swing through, you know, let me know and I can show you. You know, I live like a few blocks away from the studio where every, you know, all the Husker Du records after New Day Rising were recorded. So like Flip Your Wig, Candy Apple Gray, Warehouse. And I know the guy who runs the studio, so if you ever want to get a tour of that thing, you could probably do that. Go by the Replacement's house, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, yeah, it's a great, you know, it's awesome because it's not a tourist destination. Like, people don't come to Minneapolis. You know, Americans don't come to Minneapolis for, like, vacation, unless you're into, like, fishing or whatever, you know. But, like, but serious music heads do tend to come here for the music lore. And like First Avenue is legit, like one of the best venues in the world. And you know, there's always like cool stuff going on. So if you ever do find, you know, a conference that you can like weasel your way into, like just for a free ride to Minneapolis or something, just let me know. And I'd be happy to like be your tour guide.
Well, bro, first of all, thank you for that. You know, I'm actually sort of teetering on the precipice of being employed again to even be considering recreational travel, for sure. The whole Minneapolis friggin', you know, the bike paths and the Bob Stinson bench and the Let It Be house and, you know, like the Longhorn Bar or whatever the fuck is there now. And, all these, very storied, locations, you know, things just because, I mean, what, like there've been so many books. I mean, even just the Replacements have had like, you know, 3 or 4 significant books written about them, including, I think we're shouting them out here. Everybody can see that. I can see that. And I'm recording it. Trouble Boys by Bob Mayer. I must have read that book like 3 times, dude. Even if it was about any other band, you could have said they're like about the Doughboys. And it's like, if it was, you know, that kind of, it's like, it's so fucked up. And it's almost like so relatable because it's so fucked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough to play in a band in my 30s with a guy who was about, you know, maybe 10 years older than me, who grew up in like the golden age, you know, the heyday of 80s Minneapolis music, and saw all this stuff and is friends with all these people and, you know, has his own kind of history. Actually, you should look it up. It's the guy's name was Ed Ackerson. He sadly passed away a few years ago, but he's the one who recorded like the songs for Slim.
EP. Oh shit! Shit! I own that, and that was just talking about, you know, worthwhile projects for a worthwhile person. But anyway, bro, that's highly legit. God damn.
So I was always picking his brain. I'm like, tell me stories about, you know, seeing replacements for Husker Du or Soul Asylum or whatever, you know, and so I know people who are like contemporaries with all these people, and like, you know, and I through my gig as a journalist in the past, I got to interview Grant Hart. I interviewed Bob Mould. You know, we just hung out with Greg Norton last weekend. You know, he came to our gig and played with Snodgrass, and they did Makes No Sense at All. You know, at the end of the night, it was unbelievable. So those people are, they're around, man. I mean, it's, you know, you can run into people here, which is kind of a fun, you know.
And so to sort of talk about maybe sort of some sort of things that I guess areas of commonality, in as much as, you know, it's a regional scene, nobody's there to really get super rich or successful. You know, you got people who are super talented, super motivated, you know, close proximity to other centers, relatively enough to kind of check things out. You know, a rich creative community, largely educated because of universities and, you know, relatively good healthcare and public education and whatnot. I mean, these are kind of the breeding grounds for a pretty diverse, you know, cultural milieu or whatnot. And that's, you know, similar factors which affect, I suppose, you know, certain kinds of communities around Canada or, you know, certain of the states. I mean, you and I are pretty much exactly the same age to the day, which is so goddamn weird. Dude, I've taken with this transcript because we're going on to an hour and a half here almost.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But no, man, it's been an awesome chat. I really have appreciated this in a lot of ways. But really, there's a pretty set of copious notes that are going to go along with this. So what I'll be doing is just playing it back, and I'll be like, you know, your projects. So whatever, you know, their band camp is, and things like that. So I'll be scraping the transcript, as we say in academia, and I'll be flipping that over to you. So if there's anything else you want to speak to within the context of, you know, some WordPress notes that go along with the show, we'll certainly make sure, again, highlighting the fucking highly rad Rad Owl record that is out now, digital formats, physical formats. Shitty, man. That is, I mean, not shitty. I mean, shit. It's like long night. It's 1:30 in the morning where I am, folks.
Oh, dude. No.
But
it's okay.
Fucking so, hey, that so is badass looking
before,
stuff.
Right. Before we go, you must allow me to explain. So the younger brother of the bass player of the band, Jeremy Burgo, his younger brother, Justin Burgo, he is like a legit, like he does art for like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that, you know?
Cool.
And so he made these record covers for us. This is our first record. And it's a little dark, but so it's showing this owl that is fighting this like kind of like what was that Jim Henson movie with the Dark
Crystal? Oh, yeah, the Dark Crystal. That was fun.
He's kind of like bird creatures with like tendrils.
Yes, I know what you mean. That's some scary stuff. It's
kind of hard to see. But anyway, so this is the first record we did back in like 2018 or whatever. And so the second record he did the cover for, and this is the owl now after he's like defeated this mythical creature. And he's like holding the, you know, the decapitated like head and spine or whatever of this, and he's like bursting forth in flame because he's like all powerful now or whatever, and like it's so ridiculous, dude. Like I swear to God, we joke about it all the time. Like someone's gonna buy this because they're gonna think it's like a metal album or something.
That was my honest opinion. I'm like, is this a fucking post-hardcore new metal kind of deal? But then, I mean, but it's like you're subverting the thing. But again, this speaks to, folks, we got some very tight, aggressive, you know, seriously accomplished punk rock music that's on those records. I'm going to have to make a point of obtaining the physical media once I know exactly where I'm going to be living in Canada for my job, which hopefully is going to resolve itself here pretty soon. I've been known this record collection.
Yeah, so we'll get you on for sure. And yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, again, it sort of speaks to like we just work with our buddies and our, you know, in this case, it's like our family, you know, and it's like, we have this insanely talented artist who likes what we do. So he offered to like do some art for us. And it's like, yeah, let's just go for it, you know? And it's like, rather than do some sort of like, you know, basic
half-assed AI version or something.
Yeah, it's sort of like, hey, let's make this like crazy, you know, detailed, fantastical, you know.
Let's go all in, man. Let the fucking bad guy win a little bit. Right?
That's been a huge part of our what this band is like we take it seriously, and that we want to make good music, and we want to like challenge ourselves and like really, you know, do a good job. But it's also like, we also kind of like have to be able to laugh at ourselves a little bit too, you know. It's just like, oh, that's kind of ridiculous, but it's also awesome, you know. It's like,
I'm a dude who got like a Garfield tattoo, and I got a tattoo with like an octopus with guns. So like, I know,
yeah,
ridiculous, laughing at yourself kind of deal, man. That's
yeah, cool, man. I mean, I love it, you know. And it's, you know, it's like a Link from Zelda.
Yes, exactly. It's like nerddom. If we can't fucking rage our friggin' like inner pop culture fanboy whatever shtick. Yeah. I mean, really, you know, you could fucking keel over and die of natural causes at this age.
But yeah, that really is. I think, again, I think it's like the secret to life: being able to laugh at yourself. You know, enjoy yourself, enjoy your friends, enjoy what you're doing, and try
that
to not
totally it.
Try to toe that line between taking it seriously and not taking it too seriously, and getting to meet people like you along the way, where it's just like, holy shit, now I got a buddy in St. John, New Brunswick, and maybe one day I'll get there. Or it sounds like you might not even be living there much longer.
Dude, so. I'm a month away from living on an air mattress in my mom's basement, collecting unemployment insurance, vlogging and podcasting full time, and also I got 5 interview type things for some pretty K-12 corporate sector, who the crap knows. Yeah. Anywhere across this country is going to get me closer to where my children are. Which is ultimately, I'm like Odysseus. I'm just trying to get back across Canada to my kids in some kind of fashion wherein I don't have to be broke. So,
is that where you're, are you from Western Canada?
No, I've gone every freaking place, man. And that is where I will defer properly to the notes on the show, because this is not about the education, why, fours, and what sits, because quite frankly, we have an entire other podcast for that. That being said, it has been such a goddamn pleasure, bro.
This is the problem, is like I have a journalism background, so I'm gonna ask you questions now, and if we don't turn it off, I'm gonna be like,
well, man, no, I'll tell you what, I think just based on the discussion, there's some interfunctionality, and that's intentionally designed, as my background is a curriculum and e-learning specialist, wherein I have a PhD, so I can speak to the philosophical rationale behind such choices, which kind of makes me having a bit of a freakish kind of second head in certain regards, but more helpful than not. And so to that extent, you know, I have my best friend's dad, you know, who writes novels, coming on to the education podcast, because to me, education and creativity are inseparable at a fundamental level, and they speak to each other and they interoperate. And so that's all to say, Christ, I mean, why the fuck not have an episode of the, thing where we talk about non-music related shit, because I think it would still be an interesting chat, bro. It's really cool talking with you, man. I really, I feel like it's been a nice conversation here. I'm fucking going on 2:00 in the morning, and I'm far too sober at the moment to kind of commit to anything longer, especially for the sake of anybody who's listening, to the point where we're going on an hour and a half here, friend. So I am going to end the conversation, or at least the recording of the conversation. Folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. David and Rad Owl are all fucking legit, and you got to check the resources that are on the post. Check the Bandcamp. Go to Fest. Go to Pooza Fest. Tell your friends. Demand it from your local independent shops. Get it from all fucking possible venues. It's on the streaming platforms, all of them, even, as well as Bandcamp. It's fucking highly, extremely rad. So, bro, it has been an absolute slice. I'm going to end it right now. Thanks a lot for being here, dude.
Thank you, man.
Take care, everybody.